Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about thoughts on e-learning. Today we're going to talk about mobile learning, and we're going to talk about how mobile learning, or m-learning, turns great books into great experiences. So let's begin. Imagine you're taking a walk in the gardens near the center of your town. Near a couple of Gothic-inspired bridges and a still-crumbling Victorian mansion, when you see what appear to be college students dressed in black. One is filming the others with a handheld camera. Another is looking at what appears to be an iPod or an MP3 player. The wind shifts and you hear, "Thus quoth the Raven," in a loud voice. Might be a sepulchral voice. As you approach, you hear them discussing how they are going to edit the film using iMovie or Windows Movie Maker, which comes standard with their laptops. They discuss how they will upload the movies to YouTube and then to Google Video, and then will send links and embed the video on their MySpace pages. It's for a class project. You're shocked. You had no idea that college students had a passion for literature. 20 years ago, when you first took classes at the university, English classes were something you suffered through because composition was required as a part of the general education requirements. You hoped to never get close to a literature course. You had heard too many stories about how students found their favorite works of literature butchered. They were studied simply to show evidence of oppression, class struggle, abuse, and degradation of women. At any rate, you had to wonder what happened to the work of literature itself, at least the way you understood literature to contain essential depictions of the human experience. You never considered yourself theory hostile. In fact, you liked looking at literature through different lenses. Psychoanalytic, feminist, post-Marxist, deconstructivist, but you believe that somewhere along the way, the work itself got lost, as did the appeal to living, breathing human beings. In the 1980s, you were not alone in feeling vaguely repelled by the formal study of literature. You took a look at statistics and quickly found that traditional colleges and universities have seen a gradual but steady and persistent decline in interest and enrollment in humanities and literature programs. The malaise dates back to a time when, paradoxically, debates raged about knowledge framed around the canonical literature, which were said to be written by dead white guys, versus the writings of newly rediscovered and rehabilitated women, ethnic minorities, and excluded out groups. Despite the vitality of the Canon Wars debate, literature programs went into a death spiral, partly because it was perceived that there was no employment for the hapless and importunate literature major, and further, that there would be little chance to express one's own individual experience with the work. If you did not parrot the professor's ideology, you'd be out of luck. You look back at the students debating how to enact Poe. You notice that they are reading a different poem and filming it. You recognize it. It is Lady Lazarus by Sylvia Plath. A thrill of emotion surges through you. Here is literature, in the wild, in and among people. The students are reviewing performances on their mobile devices. The work of art seems immediate, vital, and relevant in ways that it never did before. So what was wrong with the Canon Wars approach? Did the Canon Wars of the 1980s turn the majority of people away from the study of literature? Let's take a look. The answer consists of a small constellation of factors. Specifically, students were repelled from literature by the following. 1. It used to be common practice for instructors to use or appropriate a work of literature to promote, support, or promulgate a political agenda. Thus, the work was secondary to its propagandistic utility. Students found that to be offensive or simply boring. 2. Instructors often used to stress theory first with the work itself a far distant second. Many departments, rather unconsciously in many cases, started reversing the role of literature. Thanks to Roland Barthes, The Death of the Author, and other similar essays, it became permissible to treat the work of literature as a textual artifact and not as a result of authorial intent or invention. Most students found that approach to be far removed from something they could enjoy. 3. Courses had a text-based approach. No enactments, no books on tape, no recordings, no debates. To confine literature strictly to the printed page on the printed word on the page, and to not allow performance, collaboration, or dialogue, made it unappealing to students. Including filmed versions and allowing for imaginative dialogues can make the works come alive. 4. The student experience of the text. The pleasure of the text is spoiled by dissection. I call this the spark notes effect. Spark notes, pink monkey, cliff notes, all have their time and place. But when students simply read the dissected version, plot summary, character list, theory-mediated themes, they fail to experience the vitality of the work itself. 5. The pressure to produce a paper that conforms to a rigid standard drives students to utilize repositories of term papers and essays. Thus, the student experience is marred by plagiarism. The use of mobile devices to allow students to have a more robust experience of the text has the potential to convert a study of dry, great books into great experiences. With the portability of mobile devices, plus the ability to present text in ways that appeal to many learning styles, one can start to see how and where mobility makes texts come alive. By situating the texts within the lived experiences of the readers, the characters, themes, and conflicts seem real, immediate, and relevant. So let's look at some specific ways. 1. E-books enhance the experience of reading the text by making the following items available. A. Historical context. B. Author biographies. C. Graphics and art. D. Audio, debates, readings, etc. E. Essays and other views. F. Multimedia depictions that facilitate looking through disparate critical lenses. 2. E-books allow one to take the text into your life. The work of literature comes alive because the essential human conflicts can be viewed from the vantage point of experience. It also enhances the experience if one can enact the literature, record for a podcast, tape a video clip, tape a debate. 3. Voices, images, videos can be linked to in e-books. 4. Students can share their views via podcast, instant messaging, internet telephony, Skype, etc., and even tape each other with their cameras and smartphones and upload to their shareable spaces on the web, blogs, networking, social networking, etc. The work comes alive through the enactment of the readers who become participants in the literary text. Again, text moves from being a great book to a great experience. 5. The experience of literature invites students to ask each other the tough questions that form the core, the human base of text. There are always provocative issues to be discussed in human-first, not theory-first approaches. Granted, theory is important, but students' emotions must be engaged first. Ethics, love, loss, unity, existence, life, death. These are just a few of the categories and dialectics that engage students' emotions. Focusing on the experience of literature, the way it touches one's heart, allows students to move from plot summary to a more vital impact assessment of characters, their dilemmas, their behaviors, and how they relate to the action of the story. Mobile learning creates a shortcut to the internalization of literature. Such internalization invites readers to speak of literary characters as living paradigms or metaphors and to start to create metacognitive structures of understanding. Students will start to see repetitions, patterns, archetypal narratives, archetypal characters, and more. So I hope you've enjoyed this discussion of how M-learning can turn great books into great experiences. Thank you for listening. This is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to Thoughts on E-Learning.